enthusiastic silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 84 of Nerd Pride Radio. 84, the length in Earth years of a year on Uranus. That's right, a Uranian year. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus, or like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio. This is the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. And my co-host this week, it's R2-D2 again. Yeah, I know, he's been the co-host recently, but it turns out that I thought I lost him. I got to, I'm getting all my stuff around, getting set up. It's Easter today as I'm recording. And so we kind of had to clean the house up, you know, make room for the Easter bunny, all that stuff for last night. And, once we got to today, I couldn't find R2 anymore. I didn't know if someone threw him out. I didn't know if they hit him. I didn't know if, and it turns out that, oh, when they carried down my stack of gaming books that for some reason I keep leaving next to the dining table all the time, they also carried down R2. So, he got tucked away in the game room downstairs and I've dragged him back. So, R2 is safe. But you know what? We're going to just start right into the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast because this is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I put it down in my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, which, by the way, is overflowing with stuff. So much stuff in here. The best stuff off this list is going to get spewed out all over you guys right now, just like every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, first thing on my master list, it's my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. And this week, Pathfinder. Okay, I talk about Pathfinder a lot. For those of you who may not be familiar, it's probably been enough episodes that I should do another quick review. Pathfinder is a role-playing game, a storytelling game, that is pretty much an outgrowth of Dungeons & Dragons. If you've heard of Dungeons & Dragons, then you understand what Pathfinder is. It's almost nearly the same game. It grew out of the Dungeons & Dragons 3rd edition when Dungeons & Dragons moved on to 4th edition. The people at Paizo, the company that makes Pathfinder, decided that, you know what, we like the material we have. We want to keep going with this. And so they created their own version that was it started as a clone of Dungeons & Dragons 3, and it's kind of grown into its own thing, but the systems are very, very compatible. So that's the game I'm playing, and my character is a bard, young woman, and we've been playing this game for about a year and a half. And we played just this week, Thursday night, and it was spectacular, all right? And that's not what I'm actually here to talk about in regards to Pathfinder. In fact, it's just going to be general gaming talk, but I will say it was spectacular. This session, we got to meet what we assume is the big boss of the second book in this series. It's a 6-book series, and we get to confront him, and he's tied into my character's background and another character's background very closely. And so as we're facing off with him, he's making these threats to us and commenting on, you know, he's giving his exposition because, you know, he is the Bond villain, and this is his chance to talk about his master plan. And one of the things he mentions very casually, very offhandedly, is, and he's not even trying to get to me, because he doesn't care about me. I'm just a tool to get to Eliahed's character, to get to Ilion. And that's who he's really facing off with. And he's making these offhanded comments about how he finally tracked down Hedda and Akif, and he's implying that he has tracked them down and killed them, because he knows how much that will hurt Ilion. Well, yeah, but those are my parents. That's my character's parents. And the whole thing was very intense, because now, I mean, we still haven't resolved this. I mean, we've beaten him, but I don't know if my parents are still alive. We still haven't found a cure for this mystery illness. We have all this stuff that we need to work on. And Dothan, my character right now, thinks her parents might be dead. And so as we're playing Thursday night, I mean, I'm literally, because, you know, it's a very long combat. And so we've been going through this combat, and we were very proud of ourselves because the teamwork was there and things were going well. And then we start getting to this back and forth. And I'm at the keyboard, and I can feel myself that if I wanted to let myself go, I could have sat there and cried sitting at the keyboard, because, I mean, I was inhabiting the character so much just at that moment that it was really overpowering. It was really well played. So to DM Darks, Pat, our dungeon master, congratulations on a well-run session, dude. That was awesome. And I think everybody else was enjoying it as much as I was. It was really off the charts. As usual, having a great time. And I bring up these exciting stories because I just want to encourage other people. If you're not into role-playing games, if you've never tried them out, or maybe you did and it wasn't quite right, lessons, try again. Find a group that suits you. There's lots of people to play with. All right, there are lots of people. If you go out online, you can find a group online that can play with you. I mean, this game we're playing, we're doing it online on roll20.com. And we have our online tabletop. It rolls dice for us. It gives us chat functions. We can turn on video if we want. My bandwidth isn't enough to handle that. But you know, you can turn on the live chat. You can turn on whatever you need. And you can play. And I highly recommend people play. And again, here's the tough part. I don't want to go into it too much because I don't want to put words in anyone else's mouth, but we've had two really good players in our group leave the group this time. And Jeff and Rika, if I've mentioned them before. And they're leaving. And kind of knew it was coming, but it's the kind of thing that the play style just doesn't mesh up. And I've played games with both of them before and had a blast. I mean, like, I've run games that they have been in, and we've all had a good time. I've been in games that Jeff has run and had a really good time doing it. We have really compatible styles in lots of ways at times, but right now this game just doesn't seem to be meshing quite as well for them. And so the lesson is, I think not every game is for everybody. You know what I mean? Because they brought brilliant characters to the table, and they roleplay them really well, and they're deeply into their characters, and everything's been very powerful, but for, I think, a long time. I don't think either one of them, I don't want to speak for Rika. Jeff, I've heard more directly from him, but I don't think they've been real satisfied with everything. That there's been lots of stuff that they've enjoyed, but some stuff that's been frustrating, and so the style just wasn't quite right, and they've decided to move on. And, I mean, Jeff has started another game that he's really, really happy with that he's running. And it's Pathfinder. It's set in the same world. That was the one I mentioned a few episodes back that I stepped in as a guest character playing Dothan in that one. So he's running it in the same world using some of the same characters. Our Dungeon Master, Pat, is even one of the characters in that game. And he says it's a great game. He's having a great time. And so there's been some frustrating moments. But fortunately, we're all adults, and we kind of talked it out, and we tried to work on some solutions, and it never quite came together for us as far as getting something that everybody could be happy with. I mean, I've been thrilled personally, and it makes me feel kind of bad because I'm having a great time. I have loved everyone in this game from the very beginning. I'm having a great time, and I feel bad that it's not working for you. It's just I can't, and I know you want to make some changes, but I don't want to change anything because I'm having so much fun. And sadly, the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, Jeff knows he's going. Rika knows she's going. And yet they're still trying to do some stuff to help us. They put in, you know, they wanted to work on teamwork among the group. They felt like, you know, we've got a big unwieldy group. There's 9 of us playing this game. And that's part of the problem, I think. That's part of what causes the compatibility issues is how you run a game when there are 9 people playing. When traditionally, I don't know how familiar you are with role-playing games, but traditionally, you know, you're going to have 4 players is what the default assumption is. And, you know, I've played with anywhere from just 1 to usually the best games are 3 or 4, maybe 5. Much more than 5 players in it, I get kind of hanky about it. It's a little hard for me. So to play 9, I mean, you know, hats off to Pat that he can handle it at all. But it's been going really well for me. But it does change up how things play. And so here, you know, like I said, we've been working on the teamwork, and that was mostly Jeff. I mean, he put together a bunch of stuff and said, you know, here's the things we need to consider, that we have all these capabilities and we keep stepping on each other's toes. We really need to kind of bring this together so that we can work more as a coherent team. And holy crap, if that didn't happen, the last 2 sessions have bore that out. And wow, I didn't even realize some of the frustrations that I had been having with the combats, with the you know, when we have a whole group of people all working towards a goal, and we're stepping on each other's toes, and until we actually played out a session where it all went really smooth, I didn't even realize how much, you know, we had been getting in each other's way before. It worked out really, really well. They also wanted to do, they felt that we really needed a back channel for communication. That, you know, we play on Roll20, and, you know, you've got the chat there, and you've got the audio and video there, map, dice, the whole thing laid out on a virtual tabletop in Roll20, which is awesome. But one thing that would be really nice, it would be to have a separate chat channel, according to them, where we can all talk as players in the background and kind of coordinate some stuff so that we're not cluttering up the main thread with all of our discussion about tactics and where we want to be and just comments on the game where we're just joshing around and this kind of stuff. And I have been a real Grinch about that stuff. I have been, because to me, it seems like a pain in the ass, because I already have so much stuff open, and I'm just working on my one little laptop. I don't have multiple screens. I don't have a lot of real estate as far as pixels go, and so for me to have one more thing going, it's got to be in the background. I have to keep switching back and forth. I don't have room on my screen. Once Roll 20 is up, I don't have room on there to put a whole bunch of side-by-side stuff like I could if I... Oh, man, my office setup. I've got 2 giant screens in my office. I would love to have that here at home, but I don't. So, I've been kind of the naysayer on this stuff, saying, well, if that's what you guys want, I suppose, but I'm not, and I've been kind of grouchy about it. And as it turns out, I think it paid off. I mean, they pushed it forward, they made it happen, and it didn't work that great for me. I will tell you, the times that I needed it, like, you know, oh, I've rushed in too early to this. I'm now in a spot where I'm on the front line of combat and really did not want to be. And so I needed a way out. I needed a retreat. And the only way I needed to have to know the tactics of the game. But basically, look, if you look at the map, I'm standing here and there's 1 square open. And as long as that square stays open, then on my turn, I can move into it, safely get myself out of danger, not risk any extra attacks, not, you know. That was the square I needed. So it was so convenient to be able to go over to the back channel and say, oh, by the way, everyone, please hold that square open for me. I need that to get out of here. And they did. And then I wound up not needing it eventually. But it was nice to have that when I needed it. And then the rest of the time, I can't bother to keep switching over to it every time someone's talking, because it takes me so long to, okay, I switch over, catch up to where I was. Okay. Oh, all right. No, that's not relevant to me. Okay, good. Back to the game. Now get caught up here. It was a lot of trouble for me, but when I did need it, I was really thankful that I had it there. I'm glad we did it. And now that Jeff and Riker are going to be gone, are we going to keep doing that? I hope so. I mean, even if I don't use it all the time, it's nice when I do need it. So I guess, I don't know. The point I was making is that even among great friends and even among great role players, and I think everyone involved here is, and we're all great gamers and we all have a really good time with each other. We've enjoyed each other's company in other games, even other games that we're playing currently. But in this one particular setting, it just wasn't compatible. So you know what? If you've played before, it's not quite working out, or it wasn't quite the experience you thought it was going to be, hey, listen to the stories I'm telling. Listen to how awesome it can be. There are so many games out there, so many things to try. Find that specialized world that, I mean, because there are games designed just for playing anime, you know, playing anime-style stories. Either, you know, the high-action Dragon Ball Z, everyone's over 9,000 blasting the hell out of each other anime-style, or even there's ones that are, you know, Magical Girl anime games, or, I mean, that's just, you know, six different flavors of playing anime, much less, you know, a dozen different flavors of high fantasy role-playing in a Dungeons & Dragons, you know, Tolkien-esque kind of world, or you know, how many different games there are in cyberpunk or space opera, or, I mean, if you just, you know what, pick a TV show or movie you like, and they've probably got a game written for it. You like Buffy or Firefly, if you're, you know, into Joss Whedon stuff, they've got a Buffy role-playing game and a Firefly role-playing game. They're out there. You can find anything. And so, just because one of them doesn't work out, look, communicate, work it out, find the people that mesh with you, and you'll get there. And actually, it's kind of sad now to lose them right now, because after, like I say, they've known that they're going to leave for a while, and yet they're still working to implement stuff that they want to help improve the game, improve the way our campaign was functioning. And after this last session, I was like, it ran so smoothly and so well that I was like, wow, it's really working. This is, that makes it even more sad that they're going to go, because the stuff that did really go well in this last game, a lot of it has to be attributed to Jeff for pushing that, for Rika, for pushing all that. So, you know, hey guys, if you're listening, it's been really cool. It's been a great year and a half. We've played, what, 52, 55 sessions of this game online, and we've had a great time. And I'll miss you in this game, but Jeff, I'm always up for a guest spot if you've got an NPC that needs playing, especially like I talked about last time. If you want a hireling, if you want some piddly nobody character, and you want someone to embody that for a while, I think that would be so much fun. So, you know, good luck to you guys on your games. Let me know when you've got openings. I would love to get in again. So there you go. That's my gaming table this week. What's next? Oh. It's time for my unnamed history segment. Don't know much about history. That's right. The unnamed history segment. And this was a tough topic to categorize because if I had a pseudoscience corner, I could have put it in there, or maybe just a nerd culture report. But then I realized that no. What I'm talking about today is cryptids, cryptozoology, and that's the kind of thing that they keep showing on the History Channel. So I'm going to put it in the unnamed history segment here. And I think it's fitting because they're mostly historical. I know that there's still plenty of people who believe in Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster and any of the others I'm going to mention today. There's still people out there who fervently believe in these, but mostly they're fringes. Well, not as fringe as you'd like, really. But there is a lot of history behind these. And the reason it comes up, we were talking about folk tales in Cub Scouts this week. And in talking about folk tales, they've got your Johnny Appleseed and your John Henry and Paul Bunyan and Pecos Bill. And there's all these larger-than-life figures, as well as some really interesting real-life ones as well. The legend of Charlie Parker. Oh, Charlie Parker is one of my favorites. Have I mentioned Charlie Parker before? Before I get on to cryptozoology? Charlie Parker was, and a true story, a stagecoach driver back in the 1850s, 1860s, I don't remember. Stagecoach driver in the American West. And a grizzled old guy, wore an eye patch almost his whole life, was known as One-Eyed Charlie, and he was a stagecoach driver. He was known to have driven off and killed outlaws in his day. He was very successful and well-liked for what he did. And as the story goes, when old Charlie Parker's died, old One-Eyed Charlie, when he finally died at the end of his life, they go to prepare him for his funeral. Turns out Charlie had been born a woman. He apparently was physically, genetically female, and supposedly nobody knew that this was a surprise. And the medical examination revealed that, by the look of his hips, he had borne a child at some point in his life. So, fascinating, fascinating story. And the truth of how secret his biological gender was, you know, there's some hints that, yeah, you know what, probably his close friends knew for most of his life. Probably people just accepted him for who he was, or, yeah, but, you know, the way the legend goes, it's that, oh, yeah, old one-eyed Charlie been driving stagecoaches all his life, and at the end of his life, finally they go to prepare him for his funeral, and oh my God, nobody had any idea. And so, but truly, Charlie Parker was a person who had been born a woman, lived as a man her whole life, and, amazing story. Anyway, but that's not what I'm here for. I'm here for cryptozoology. And so, as we're going through all of these folk tales, American legends, this kind of stuff, Bigfoot is the one that captures the kids' imagination right away. And so it leads me to the story of Champy, or also just plain old Champ. But when I was a kid, we knew it as Champy. I grew up in Plattsburgh, New York, on an Air Force base, and I lived there for about 7 years when I was a kid in elementary school. And we were on the base. The base had a marina, boat dock and marina, and a little beach there that was on Lake Champlain. So it was like a half mile from my house. Lake Champlain, known for battles during the Revolutionary War. Fort Ticonderoga is up that way, and we had visited there. The house I lived in was actually built to house officers during the Revolutionary War. So old, old houses. And Lake Champlain is known for Champy, that is supposedly their version of the Loch Ness Monster that lives in Lake Champlain, Champ, or like I say, as we call them, Champy. And we, as kids, everyone knew the story. Everyone knew the story of Champy, and everybody knew somebody who had seen Champy for real. All right, that's how the story kept going around. Is everybody had heard this story. It was always just barely secondhand, thirdhand. I mean, it was close. All right, it was no. It's my cousin's friend. No, that guy I went to school with, his dad saw it. I swear. All right, and Champ was just like the Loch Ness Monster. I mean, every description of it that we heard. I mean, it's a plesiosaur. It's a Loch Ness Monster. It's your traditional sea monster, And I'm telling the kids this story because they're fascinated by the Loch Ness Monster. But, you know, that's way off in Scotland. Here, I'm giving them America's own lake monster. At least I think America's own lake monster. And so after we talked about it a little bit, decided to go do some research about it. And as I'm looking it up, it turns out that, no, it's not America's own lake monster. It's just upstate New York's own lake monster, because there are lake monsters all over the United States. Did you know that? I had no idea. And probably... a lot of you listening have grown up somewhere that you've had your own lake monster or your own local monster that everyone has heard the legend of. And this just happened to be the one where I grew up. All right. Because I went out and I found there's some place that sells a map of cryptids in the U.S. And cryptid, by the way, being any of these cryptozoological beasts, any of these mythical, unprovable beasts like Bigfoot, like Champ. And so they have this map of the whole U.S., and as I'm looking at the key to the map, and they've got a little web page that has a list of all of them that are on the map, like 12 or 13 of them on this map, because there's at least one from every state, and like 12 or 13 of them are lake monsters, and they've all got their little pictures of their lake monster there, and they all look pretty similar to Champ. They all look pretty similar to the Loch Ness Monster. And I'm like, oh, well, now I don't feel so special, darn it. I can still fall back on Lake Placid because, you know, Lake Placid, I was actually there for the Winter Olympics when they had them in Lake Placid back in, what was that, 78, I think it was. So that was pretty cool. But Champ is also still cool, I guess, but he's just one of so many. Like I say, there's 12 or 13 of them just on the map. I can't imagine how many are actually in the U.S. We got lake monsters all over the place. But the lake monsters are the least cool of the creatures that are out there. I mean, Bigfoot obviously captures everyone's imagination, and there are other versions of Bigfoot around that are either listed as being another name for Bigfoot, or they suspect it may be a subspecies of Bigfoot or Sasquatch or whatever. And those are all right, but there are ones that I've heard of the Jersey Devil. I didn't realize. I've heard the phrase Jersey Devil many times. I did not know the Jersey Devil was an actual cryptid, an actual monster that people believe in or that may once have believed in, that lives up in New England, in and around Jersey, one would presume. The Jersey Devil, apparently, the original story from what I hear is a woman who had had 12 children already, and she swore that if she got pregnant and had another one, she'd give birth to the devil himself. And then that's what came out as the Jersey Devil. And the Jersey Devil is the ugliest. Go Google Jersey Devil right now. Get an image of it. And there's the one prototypical image of it that is just the most hideous creature that looks like it's got, a horse's face with bat wings coming off of this skinny, weird, poofed body. It's gross looking. That's the Jersey Devil. But there's also the Beast of Busco, which... the Beast of Busco, less mysterious than the others. It supposedly is, you know, a 500-pound snapping turtle, which, you know, so you imagine the size of the giant Galapagos tortoises that people, you know, that you've seen pictures of, that you know, big enough you could actually sit on their back. Now imagine a snapping turtle as large as that, or in some of the diagrams of it, even larger. All right, that's the Beast of Busco, and I can't even remember where that sucker comes from. Down in Tennessee, I think it was. The one with my favorite name of all, the Pope Lick Monster. Yeah, Pope Lick. Because apparently it's from Pope Lick, Tennessee, or Pope Lick, Kentucky. Maybe it was Kentucky. Must be Kentucky. Anyway, the Pope Lick Monster is this goat-headed thing that apparently lives under a train trestle, under a bridge. I mean, literally, it's a bridge troll that lives under a bridge in Pope Lick. So, I think eats teenagers. That's probably what a bridge monster would do nowadays. So that's the Pope Lick Monster. But my very favoriteest of all of them, of all of the cryptids I could find for North America, for the United States in specific, were the Puckwudgies. And I had never heard of a Puckwudgie in my life. If you've heard of them, then, God, kudos to you. These things are cool. And when I go to do a search for Puckwudgie, first thing it suggests to me is, do you mean the Pathfinder Puckwudgie? Wait, there's stats for it in Pathfinder? You're kidding with me! But seriously, the Puckwudgie comes from a Native American legend. It is a small goblin, sprite, dwarf, elf, whatever. The very traditional little people of various legends from around the world. But the Puckwudgie is sort of like a half gnome or troll and half porcupine. So you got to imagine this little, you know, 3 foot tall gnomish being with the big face, and then porcupine quills all down its back. And according to the legend I read, they were originally friendly, but somewhere humanity gave offense to them, and so now they come around in the night and they steal souls, or they cause mischief, or there's various legends. But the Puckwudgies, as little, like I say, little magical half porcupine trolls, they are just the coolest, because it's so, the fact that it's porcupine, it makes it so so North America, you know what I mean? It feels very local, unlike traditional goblins and kobolds and elves and dwarves. They're all very much rooted, at least the ones we use in Pathfinder, in Dungeons and Dragons, the ones you see in Tolkien. They all come out of Norse myth or European myth, and they're all very, very European in their flavor. And the Puckwudgie feels American. It's Native American. It feels very North America. It's odd to have something mythological like that that just feels so local. And I like it. And sure enough, I look them up in Pathfinder, and it's the Puckwudgie. It's this, they're listed as, you know, 3 foot tall, monstrous beasts. That are half you know, goblin, beast, whatever it is, and then the other half porcupine. And they have their poisonous quills that apparently, rather than just stealing souls, their poisonous quills will transform you into a zombie that the Puckwudgie can then control and command. They're not undead themselves, but they can create undead to create slaves to help fight for them, or whatever it is a Puckwudgie would use an undead soul for. So there you go. So that was my bit on cryptids and cryptozoology. I just thought it was the coolest stuff. And again, it serves, like when I've gone and looked into, Hindu myth, or gone back to revisit Greek and Norse myth, or when I've looked at, every time I look, there's something new. There's something out there in these mythologies that I didn't even realize existed. I mean, obviously, the wealth of inspiration and information is just phenomenal. I could do this forever. I love looking at this kind of stuff. And the Pukwudgie is my absolute new favorite. Coolest thing. And now that I've realized that someone has already statted them for Pathfinder, trust me, they are showing up in one of my games because they are cool. I can't wait. So, but enough for the history segment. What's next? Get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, "Rrr!"
That's right. It's time for some nerd rage. And my nerd rage this time, it's not going to be long. I am just sick and tired of people who post stuff online. Maybe I've even done a nerd rage about this before, but oh, it keeps coming back. People who post stuff online just openly post someone else's material and say, and they give a disclaimer at the beginning, especially on YouTube. "Hey, I don't own any of the rights to this, but here you go." As if claiming that you don't own the rights to it, explaining to everyone that you don't own the rights, somehow makes it okay for you to put it on YouTube, and then eventually YouTube runs ads, and if you're popular enough with someone else's material, you're getting paid for their material through ad revenue. And I have no idea how much ad revenue you actually get out of YouTube. I mean, for obviously some people, it's quite a lot, and they can make a living off of it. For most people, I'm guessing it's mostly chump change. But the idea that someone posts up someone else's material and makes a profit off of it and thinks it's okay to do that as long as you explain that it's not yours. Like somehow pointing out that you're stealing makes it okay to steal. And it drives me crazy, especially when it's music videos, when it's stuff because most of the music videos out there, most artists are putting their videos on YouTube for free. They're out there and you can watch almost any song you could possibly want. You can see the official video from the actual artist listed on YouTube. You can actually go watch the artist themselves, watch their post that comes from them or their production company, and whatever revenue or recognition comes from your viewing of their song goes back to them what owns it. All right, you may have a problem with how record companies and publishing companies, you may have a problem with their contracts and how they manage the artists that they run. You may have a problem with where the money goes and that kind of stuff. But that's the contract they signed into, and that's the official place for that music. So the idea to me that someone else, I mean, when it's already provided for you, you can already go and watch it for free. The idea that somebody else is also going to put it up for free with the disclaimer that they don't own it, but hey, here it is, and they're going to steal some of that viewership off of that, it bugs the crap out of me. That's why I always try and look for the original. Always try and find the original. And for some reason, this is a small thing, and I don't even know how much good it's doing. But all right, John Oliver, I love Last Week Tonight. I've said that before. I've consumed everything that I can get off of YouTube from John Oliver and his show, because I don't have HBO. And although HBO is going to have a streaming service starting later this year, I think they're going to have a pure streaming service. So you don't have to have cable. You don't have to pay for HBO through the traditional channels. You can just get the HBO streaming service, which is right now it's called HBO Go. I don't know if the new streaming service by itself is still going to be called that. But you're going to be able to get that. I'm going to consider that one because, I mean, between Last Week Tonight and Game of Thrones, I mean, there's so many shows, so many good shows. I care less even about their movies. Although, if some of their movies are included in that package, hey, so much the better. They'll have some newer releases that Netflix doesn't have yet on stream. Cool for me. But I may consider that. But in the meantime, I don't have HBO because I don't have cable and I don't have any other recourse for getting it right now. But Last Week Tonight, John Oliver does put out tons of clips from his show, at least one a week, and puts them out online for our consumption to keep people excited about his show and motivated on the topics that they're discussing. And so therefore, I go out and I check him out every single week. I go watch whatever he's put up for us. And every time I do, there's always a list of suggestions afterwards that says, hey, if you liked this, check out some of these. And then there will be tons of clips of John Oliver, some of it with material that I haven't seen, where people have stolen it from HBO and are just posting it under their own names. Sometimes with that annoying disclaimer of, hey, I have no rights to this, but here, I'd like to make a little money off of it. And sometimes not. And I don't watch any of those. And again, is that, you know, here I could watch almost his entire show for free if I wanted to, if I was willing to watch all of those. But I choose not to because, hey, look, he's already given me material. He's giving me, you know, I mean, it's 15 minutes a week. But he's giving me free material that I'm allowed to watch, and the revenue goes back to him and HBO and his show. I don't know. For some reason, I stand on that principle and I don't know if it makes any difference. I really don't. But for some reason, I feel it's important. Just like Calvin Hobbes. I know that there's tons of Calvin Hobbes merchandise out there. And I also know that every single bit of it is unlicensed. Because Bill Watterson, other than a couple of minor things that he agreed to for charity reasons or for whatever early on, other than those which are long since gone, I mean, those are 30 years in the past, he has never approved any merchandising for Calvin and Hobbes, ever. It's just it, and which I think he's silly, but that's his principle, and that's what he stands on. And out of respect for that, even though there is, you know, a million different things that I could buy with Calvin and Hobbes on it nowadays, I'm going to respect his wishes. He didn't want it merchandised, so as much as I would love to have a Calvin and Hobbes t-shirt, or Malvin and Cobbs, even better, I don't buy them. And again, Malvin and Cobbs even, which is the Calvin Hobbes in the Firefly universe, Malvin and Cobbs are, it is probably a legitimately protected parody, and therefore probably acceptable for me to buy, and yet I still feel hinky about it, so I don't. I wish people would stop stealing there's some things that you can maybe justify. There's some things that I can understand. There's some things where you're doing a legitimate parody of something, or you have a legitimate reason for having clips or for having, you know, sharing whatever. I mean, look at me. You know, every single week I put out this show and I use snippets of famous songs. But I'm not making any money off of this show. But even if I were making money off of this show, I'm not. I don't know. It's going to sound like I'm talking myself into a corner here, so I'm just not even going to bother with it. But the whole point is I'm using a 5-second snippet of a song, a 10-second snippet of a song. And I'm always redirecting. I'm not using their whole work. I'm always redirecting people to, hey, if you like these songs, please go buy them. Because I honestly love every song I put into my show. All right. That's the reason I use them. When I've got a new segment to do, if I need a new snippet of a line of whatever, that's what I'm going to find. But anyway, that's, you know what, by going on any further, I'm just watering down my point. I need to stop doing that. So anyway, that's my rage, my slightly hypocritical rage. There you go. Do I have anything else? Oh, look at that. We're at 40 minutes. You know what? I was going to do a little cleanup, but we've gone well into our time. So instead of doing cleanup, and I'm telling you, this list is packed. My master list is overflowing. I'm going to have to do some cleanup at some point. But we'll save it, because instead, it is time to move on to the Pod-O-Matic! Holy blueberries and sweet sassy molassy, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And our very first number here is 92. And if I had the Pod-O-Matic list in front of me, I would be able to tell you what that is. Here we go. 92 is from Elijah, my son. All right, that's spectacular. Elijah says, Dad, What would you name a planet? Oh, that's good, because there are so many planets out there. Thousands of them. More to come. I would, if I could name a planet in our solar system, because there are so many planets in our solar system. All right. Yes, I'm telling you, there's thousands of planets out there that we've discovered in our galaxy. But more than that, there's tons of planets right here at home that we haven't even found yet. We're getting to them, okay? And in addition to the traditionally recognized eight that you guys all know about, you also know about Pluto, which is a dwarf planet, and you also know that there is, well, you may not know, but I do, and I keep telling you, Sedna and Kaowar and Orcus and Haumea, Makemake. No, it's just Haumea. Haumea and then Makemake and Ceres. There are so many out there. And if I had to name one myself, I've stalled long enough. If I had to name one myself, they traditionally name them after gods in our solar system. Gods, and originally it was, you know, Greek, Roman gods, but they've kind of expanded it out to be more inclusive of other faiths and other mythological traditions. And so therefore, I would name a planet Brandabaris. Yeah, that's right. The halfling god of luck. That's what, from straight out of what? First edition, second edition Dungeons and Dragons, Brandabaris. That would be the name of my dwarf planet. Because we're not going to find any more terrestrial planets or gas giants in our solar system, obviously. But we're still going to find and have to name at least 40 or 50 more dwarf planets. And that's going to be spectacular. And so my nomination, Brandabaris. If we have any people out there, future astronomers, physicists, and you ever get to a position in your life where you get to name a planet, please name it Brandabaris, just for me. And then send me a note, because I would love to know that. All right, go ahead. That was Aiden, had to push the R2 button this time. 21. Welcome, Aiden.
Oh, hello. God.
And now the other kids are out and about, so it may get noisy.
I am the herald of chaos.
Yeah, no, you clearly are. So, you want to move around to the other side so you're on the mic?
I guess. Making me hobble.
All right, 21 is from Daz. And Daz says, how much better would Star Wars Episodes 1, 2, and 3 have been if the creative team behind Guardians of the Galaxy had been involved?
Oh, so good.
I know, right? That's what he says. That's how he finished. He wanted to wait for the answer and then say, I know, right?
So cool. It's not cool.
That's okay. This is our joke lately, and it comes, we're quoting straight out of Thrilling Adventure Hour, but hold on, don't move. Pull your chair over this way. The way the cord is touching you there, it's screwing up. I'm getting some extra static I'm going to have to take out later.
Touching my balls. My balls cause interference.
Stop that. Now I have to edit that out. Please don't do that.
Just make sure you know where to edit out.
God, just sit down. All right. Anyway. From Thrilling Adventure Hour, from Sparks, Nevada, Marshall on Mars, He it's a line he uses a lot, and it's usually in reference to his Martian tracker, Croach, and his faithful Martian companion, Croach the Tracker, as it were. And Sparks will, whatever is going on with Croach, Sparks will look over and go, so gross.
Stimulate his egg sacs.
Yeah, stimulate his egg sacs, for example. It's so gross.
It's not gross.
And then Croach responds with, it is not gross. And then of course, you then go, so gross. All right, and so we do that a lot with so gross, so cool. Anyway, it's a lot of back and forth. Inside jokes. It's entertaining for podcast material. But how much better would Star Wars Episodes 1, 2, and 3 have been if the creative team behind Guardians of the Galaxy had been involved? You know what? If anyone other than Lucas had been allowed to take charge and guide this thing, even using Lucas's story. Let Lucas write it. Let him come up with the frame of the story. Let him write as much as he wants of it. And then have an editor and a director who had free reign to make it into the movie they wanted to make without him being able to control stuff from behind the scenes, make him, you know, like I say, you can even take the story he wants, and then once he's got that story out there, then he needs to back the hell off and give someone else the chance to make it into a real movie. Even that would have been way, way better than what we had. And that's why I have a lot of hope for not just A New Hope, but beyond A New Hope, Star Wars 7, 8, and 9. I think the new Star Wars movies, look, Disney has done right by the Marvel creative team, and I've been enjoying the crap out of all the Marvel movies. I think that Star Wars can have something good. And if not, yeah, so what? We still have the original. And I still say that Star Wars, the original Star Wars. And again, I'm not going to refer to it as Episode 4, although I know some people need that qualification. The original Star Wars is spectacular. We've been watching here at home. We watched The Goonies together as a family, because I'm educating the youngest ones. We watched Gremlins just a week ago, 2 weeks ago, whenever it was. Oh, awesome. Gremlins holds up, guys. Holds up really well.
Oh, yeah, it does.
And in fact, I forgot how much Spielberg enjoyed... hold on a second. Oops, sorry. Quick episode of Mike Was Wrong! It wasn't Spielberg. The minute it came out of my mouth, I knew that was wrong, and I had to go check IMDb, and sure enough, it's not Spielberg. What the hell was I thinking?
Who was it?
Joe Dante? Written by Chris Columbus? I think that's what it said. Hold on. Now let me pull it back up.
Time Traveler Chris Columbus?
No. Chris Columbus, who directed Harry Potter, Chris Columbus.
Not Chris Columbus.
Yes. But what I was going to say is that Gremlins, I was confounding it with Spielberg because I was going to make a comparison to Jurassic Park. The idea of both of them open up, making me think that this is going to be a happy family movie, and then quickly they turn very, very dark. But Gremlins held up well, and so the next one we were going to get would be Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I told that to the little ones. I said, hey, Raiders of the Lost Ark for the next one? Well, their mom did. I just happened to be in the room. And Eli said, well, can we do Star Wars first? The original Star Wars? I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe he hasn't seen that yet. So that's what's coming. I'm really excited about that one too. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Didn't we like spend like that one 5-day weekend because of snow days watching every single Star Wars movie in existence?
We did at one point. Yes. Yes. We watched all the way through them, but that was, Eli was little at the time.
Yeah.
So he doesn't remember any of that.
Well, it wasn't because of snow days. It was because they were doing something. Work on the school, and the glue that they were using was noxious and all that.
No, they were actually removing mold.
Was that?
I think they were removing mold from the school.
Oh, well, so then they just lied to us?
Or something. Well, they didn't want to make a big deal of it at the time, but yeah, that's what it was.
Jacob's over there nodding.
So, anyway, that would be cool. If, like I say, if anyone other than Lucas has creative control, and especially with the really cool stuff that Disney has been allowing people to make in their name recently. I'm excited about what's coming up. 1, 2, and 3 could have been way better, but you know what? They've got other chances.
But I can see where Lucas is coming from, though, because, like, back in my day, to quote myself, if I play with other people, I can't do what I want.
No, that's very true. That has always been your problem. From the time he was little, Aiden has always, he would rather just go play by himself, you know, get out his own toys, his Legos, his blocks, his whatever he's going to do, and just play on his own. And
what are you talking about?
Talking about Star Wars and how your brother is antisocial. And so when we asked him, we're like, well, don't you want to go play with the other kids? Because we were kind of, you know, the teacher had mentioned that he doesn't play with the other kids a lot at school. This is in preschool. So we asked him about it, and he said, well, yeah, but if I go play with them, then I don't get to do what I want. I have to do what they want. That sucks. So that's always been his attitude, and Lucas apparently shares a lot of that. He's over-controlling and megalomaniacal and whatever else you want to
learn. Megalomaniacal? Hey, now!
I'm just saying. So,
maniacal, yes. The first part of that, don't know what that means.
Guys, I really think we could be a bit more Easter-related for this episode.
Yeah, as I say, I'm recording on Easter. No, we can't be more Easter-related. Hold on.
Easter-related!
Sorry. New question. 74.
Got it.
What is 70? Oh, God, I just hit the Minecraft button instead of the Excel button.
Darn why it. Is that still there?
I don't know. I haven't played Minecraft in ages. I don't even know why I need a shortcut for it on the taskbar, but there it goes. Minecraft launcher.
Do you still secretly play it?
No. No, I really don't. I haven't played it in months.
Why don't I believe you?
Because I've been playing Spirit Stones. That's why.
And playing Spirit Stones and playing right. And playing.
Number 74 is from Zimney. Zimney said, ever had a PC with a cool epithet or title? A cool title or nickname? Other than...
I named mine Susan.
Yeah, that was Thrackerzog. I don't think so. Other than, right now, Dothan's last name is Ghost Song, and that's a name that was granted to her. It's not like a family name or anything. So Dothan Ghost Song. But other than that, I can't remember. But I don't have a whole lot of PCs of my own, because I'm usually the game master. But other than, okay, when we were very young, when we were back in high school, junior high, we played a long time where it was just me and my brother Kyle. I was the game master, and he was my only player. And he played a halfling thief named Balin, who, by the way, traveled for a while with Brandabaris, which would be an awesome name for a planet. So anyway, Balin, my brother had this thing about, back in first edition Dungeons and Dragons, every level had a title to it. So if you were a thief, you know, at like, and I can't remember the order that they went in, but, you know, you were, you know, at level 2, a burglar, and at level 3, a cut purse, and at level 4, for some reason, they had titles for every level, as if that made any sense for a thief, for example. But at one point, one of the level titles was Sharper. And so at, you know, level whatever it was, he became Balin the Sharper. And so he put that as the title on the top of his new character sheet as he was redrawing everything, and we had official character sheets. And so he put it up there at the top, and he called him Balin the Sharper, and that was his name. And even though he advanced in levels after that, he never did bother to change the title. So he was always Balin the Sharper, which was just kind of a cool nickname. But other than that, I can't think of any. But enough of that. 67, there was a glare on it. 67 is from Zimney again. Hey, Zim, we've got, how can Mario have so many abilities and interests, but not once have I seen him do plumbing? Well, now, come
ooh,
on.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
All right, what's your answer?
It's all a drug trip.
Okay, that's more creative than mine. My thought is that, yeah, I know, look, there's Mario Tennis and Mario Kart and Mario, I don't know, he does everything. Lots of princess saving, and Bowser defeating and that kind of stuff. But my thought was always that Mario was originally a plumber, and that's how he earned his money.
And now he's just really eccentric?
Right, he founded Mario Brothers Plumbing, which earned him all of his money, and then once he was a millionaire, he then went Howard Hughes crazy, and he now just blows his money on whatever he wants.
Whether a castle that... Yeah, with magic paintings.
Whether it's cart
quote magic.
Right. Cart racing across rainbows, tennis. Tennis is not that exciting.
On a pit of lava.
Yeah, see, exactly.
It's
so,
all drugs, dude. All
so I
drugs.
Assume that he didn't start making video games until after he had already made all of his money. And so that's why he doesn't do any plumbing. 62. Hey, we're already right there. 62 is from Zimney again, and Zim says...
Zim is on a roll today.
I know, which is unusual. Zim doesn't usually get this many. A friendly-looking robot shows up in the room you're in right now, tells you it's from the future, and does the whole, in its Arnold voice, come with me if you want to live. How do you react to this?
Well, I go with it. I want to live.
Well, okay, but you believe it?
Well, duh, it's a robot.
It's a robot from the future.
Right.
Okay. Do you ask for any details?
No. You don't question a robot from the future.
All right. Gotta go with it.
If it's a robot, intelligent enough to talk, it's from the future.
Very true. 74. We've already got that one. 57 It's from Zimney. I know. The man is a master. What is the dumbest rumor you've ever heard about yourself?
Ooh, 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 ooh. I got it. I know what mine is.
You've got one?
Yeah.
Is it appropriate for the podcast?
I have another one.
Okay, what's the dumbest rumor you've ever heard about yourself?
Hey, did you remember that Aiden guy? He's got like 28 bottles of barbecue sauce in his locker. Kid you not.
There was a rumor going around that you had 28 bottles of barbecue sauce in your locker.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Didn't anyone ever explain why?
No. They just said, I have a thing for barbecue sauce.
Can't argue with that. 55.
If it's Zimney, I swear.
Hey, nope, it's from Mrs. Darks. Sarah Beth.
Hi.
And Mrs. Darks says, are the old animal casts available online someplace?
Probably not.
Nope. Nope, they are not. Which
they
is
killed
which
it with fire.
Which is too bad, because you would have loved them. They are... They're an odd thing, because we did 116, 117 of them, and we had a great time doing them, and they were funny, 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 really spectacular stuff. But they were also really, really foul. I mean, they were filthy, filthy things, and the kind of stuff that, at this stage in my life, I'm not thrilled about having them out there to be associated with Nerd Pride. I mean, if I've got to be completely honest with you, not that I'm not proud of them. I am. And they were spectacular. We had so much fun doing them. But they are a really low-quality podcast as far as audio goes. We recorded everything was recorded by calling into a phone-in service that recorded for us. And then we'd get the thing back, and we'd wind up putting it out like that. And so everything sounds like we're on Skype together, because we were calling on our cell phones, going through a service.
Skype would have sounded better.
Right. And so they're low quality. They're very non-politically correct, very filthy. And so, we got to a point where my brother is writing young adult novels, and, I started Nerd Pride, and it was the kind of thing that, look, our kids are getting to the age where they're going to be checking out our stuff, listening to all of our material. And it was something that we just not comfortable having out there right this moment. I think as we get older, as our kids get older, we'll probably go back to it. But also, there's some stuff in there that is so, so a product of its day that it is really not politically correct. We did an episode entitled Women in Gaming.
Oh, I was just going to say, girls suck at games.
Yeah, well, and our whole point about doing Women in Gaming was the premise was we were going to come on and absolutely deadpan, we were going to be the worst human beings possible as far as our attitudes towards women. I mean, we were just straight up terrible. And that was the humor, is that anyone who listened to us and anyone who knew us knew that we didn't mean any of that stuff. But we never explained in the podcast. We never told anybody that we didn't mean it, because that was our style of humor, is that, look, we're going to do stuff that is completely horrible, and you have to know us well enough to know that that's not who we are. And it's a tough humor to get used to. It really is. And there was even one of the reviews that we had. We had talked about going to Gen Con, and we talked about how our mother paid for the trip because we were up for an award, and that was her special gift to us. And so as we're talking about it, on the podcast, we're talking about going to Gen Con with our mom, and we start making jokes about how, you know, even though she's paid for everything, we're acting like, you know, she's paid for everything, but we refer to her as Checkbook. That's our nickname for her. It's as if we take her for granted because she's just the money, and talk about what a pain in the ass she was having to drag around that oxygen tank the whole time, which my mom doesn't have an oxygen tank and never did. And it was all a joke, and anyone who knew us knew we were just making that stuff up. But there was a reviewer who reviewed it and talked about what horrible human beings we were because we would talk about our mother that way and because we would treat people the way we were treating them. And again, it's a very specific sort of parody that we were doing that, again, it's hard to translate. So we, when Animal Ball went down, we had the option of, okay, well, we can reload all of these up to Nerd Pride and we can make them available and, you know, we'll create all the links. And we thought, no, you know what? For right now, let's just leave them aside. And when the day comes, I don't even have copies of them anymore. Kyle, I have copies of maybe 12 episodes out of 100 and some. Kyle's got all the rest stored somewhere. I hope he still has them. And eventually I'll get a copy of them, and eventually we'll look through them and decide, okay, do we want to start putting these out? Because they are funny. I mean, I've re-listened to the few that I have. I've re-listened to them a couple times, and they're really funny. But again, with the attitudes that we may have given towards certain hot-button PC issues, I mean, in light of feminism and gay rights and some of the jokes that we may have made that would have been appropriate 10 years ago when we did it, may be a little embarrassing now. So I don't know. But no, they are not available right this moment. So sorry about that. You know what? One more question. Here we go. 59.
Ended on a high note.
That's right. 59 is from Ronster. Well, hey there, Ron. Ron says, in an RPG campaign you are running, what is the one thing that you feel would be unforgivable behavior?
Using the kidnapping of one of your main party members as a plot device to get you somewhere.
No, that's just good GMing.
Sure it is.
No, that's good GMing.
You took our white mage, Dad. We need her.
Yeah, you do, and that's why you will wind up going directly
getting
into,
murdered by a dragon.
That's why you'll go directly. No, you're getting murdered by a dragon because you chose to do really stupid stuff that got the dragon people pissed off at you.
No.
So, yes, Lisa?
Giving someone real grenades that are supposed to be confetti grenades.
Yes, she is. Lisa is still very, very upset that Kyle's paranoia character had a real grenade instead of a confetti grenade and blew her up. He thought he was going to be funny, and instead, dead body exploded and she died, and she's still really, really pissed about that. But the unforgivable, I don't know, intentionally ruining the game in some way.
And the main character was hit by lightning.
Yeah?
That'd be unforgivable. He just like, and he's dead. Okay, moving on.
That happens. I did once, someone did something to piss me off in a game of Paranoia once, and so I was throwing a little Game Master tantrum, and so I had a character come out named Sore Throat 6, and he came out and he announced, I am the god of hellfire, and he reached into their chests and tore out two characters' hearts and left them dead and stormed off. Because I was throwing a tantrum and I was pissed off and I didn't know who was responsible, but I was going to punish these guys because they seemed most likely. Long story.
Wow.
And ultimately, look, it's a paranoia game, so death is cheap and easy, and it all worked out very well. And I learned some lessons about being a little over-controlling as a game master. But it was a good time. So I don't know. There's all sorts of things that someone could do, but someone who is intentionally trying to ruin the story, intentionally trying to screw things up, and when you talk to them about it, they don't listen and they continue doing it. I suppose that. But for the most part, I'm not. I've never run into something that I think is unforgivable. What?
My friend group, they had their old D&D group, and to protect names, when Billy was their DM.
Yeah.
Billy, because he had to leave for college, decided that, you know what? He's not going to end on a high note. He's going to make their level 7 adventure party fight a level 20 black dragon.
Mm-hmm. And then just kill them all off?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a bunch of unforgivable things in that game. Yeah. But that's also because young. I mean, when teenagers are gaming, it is... You go through learning stages. And so he made a whole bunch of choices that I found distasteful just hearing the stories later.
Yeah.
But, again, it's a group of teenagers playing, and everyone learns their story style and how they enjoy doing things. So, you know, that's totally up to them. You can't hold that against a person. And, again, to protect names, not gonna go into specifics. But, anyway, that's the end. And so, therefore, I should pull up my script so I know how to read off the credits.
Shouldn't you know this by now? What is this, like episode 79?
84.
Oh,
this podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's in the Garage, Wonderful World by Sam Cooke, and that was it. Yep, that was it. All of these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to get your very own pocket mod, go to pocketmod.com for free printing and folding instructions. Pocket mods are awesome. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, then spread the word and let other people enjoy it as well. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball, Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com. I promise I will actually respond to you, or find me on Twitter, at @nerdprideradio, or even check out my Facebook page, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But, to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me, you sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, send me a message, we will hang out, we'll become best friends in the world, we'll have fun! Now it's time for a little listener betrayal. Before I start recording, I try to remember to go out and post up that I'm recording and see if anyone has anything to add. So here's what people posted up while we were just talking. Starts off with Stan. Stan says, what are your defense plans should Zombie Jesus arise in your area?
Taste delicious.
Ha ha! Very good. As always, the defense plans for any zombie invasion is to head out to my in-law's place. They've got high ground, lots of guns, lots of stockpiled food. We'd be safe there for a while.
Whoa! This is Zombie Jesus.
Right.
He can rise from the undead.
Right. Well, that's my problem, is it's Zombie Jesus, so if Jesus is coming back, it may involve different plans. We may have to
get some unholy water?
No. We'd have to find some way to make safe contact to be able to find out if... hold on. Can you guys hear her? Can you hear her back there? She's still complaining about that confetti egg confetti grenade that turned out to be a real grenade. She's still ranting about it. It's really funny. So I don't know. We'd have to.
I wasn't looting the body.
No, you weren't looting the body. You were just turning him over. Right. And then when you rolled the body over, he was holding your grenade. That is not my fault. He's the one that had the grenade. He's the one that chose to hold on to the grenade he was dying.
He went all Red Dawn on you?
Oh, yeah. It was great. But then, Eliahad adds to this. So, how would your plans differ if it was regular Jesus? Well, if it's regular Jesus, you just go down and visit and hear what the man has to say, because obviously this is going to be spectacular. So... and Dark says, Zombie Moses?
Can he only part blood?
Once again, any zombie invasion, head for high ground, get the guns, make sure your stockpiles are safe, secure the perimeter, and then we'll go out and see what's going on.
Let my people eat!
That's awesome. But that is the end of our listener betrayal. Oh, you know what I forgot? I forgot to have GLaDOS do a recap. Cool. You know what? Let's have GLaDOS do the recap right now, and we'll end on that.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit, and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
Say goodnight, R2. Say goodnight, Aiden.
Goodnight.